Authors Over 50, Writing in Life's Sweetest Third. Authors Over 50's weekly podcast celebrates writers and their journeys to publication. Writing after 50 is a whole story on its own, so let's skip to Life's Sweetest Third and talk with authors about their journey from pen to publish. Welcome, I'm Julia Daly, your host, and I invite you to listen to interviews with writers who've achieved their goal of publishing a book just later in life. We've seen award lists for under 30 or under 40, but I've yet to see lists for those who've achieved a significant milestone of their own, launching a new career and publishing their first book after the age of 50. We will hear about these authors' inspirations, struggles, strategies, and the smell of that first book. These writers' journeys inspire me because I'm one of them. My guest today is a lifetime lover of books. Born in Brooklyn, she was raised in New Jersey before attending a small, quirky liberal arts college and a large, preppy university, both in New York State. A book publicist by profession, she lives with her husband and sons in suburban New Jersey. She spends a lot of her day taking pretty photos of books. Things that make her happy include strong tea, turtles, sunshine, sheep, and the ocean. Welcome to Authors Over 50, Andrea J. Stein.
Thanks so much, Julia. I'm so happy to be here.
Andrea, our opening question is always, so what took you so long to write your first book?
Well, I've actually been writing my whole life, but this is the first book to be out in public. I would say part of what took me this long is to have had something that I really felt ready to share with the larger world. It's actually the third novel I've written. The first one I was in high school, I'd be completely afraid to go back and read that one now. And I actually, when I attended that small quirky liberal arts college, I intended to major in creative writing. And when I got there, I was sadly very intimidated by all of my fellow, much cooler in my estimation, much cooler, hipper students writing much cooler, hipper things than I. And I never took a creative writing class. And I look back on it and I wish that I had the self-confidence. Not that I'm as confident as I would like to be even today, but I wish I had the sense of self and the belief in myself then that I do now, because I recognize that all kinds of writing are worthy and all kinds of writers, and I should have taken those classes. But that's probably part of what slowed me down, although I continued to write on my own for years, and then I was finally ready to share with the world.
What was your inspiration for this book?
So I had a conversation years ago with someone who was telling me about a short film he had just made about his high school, his college girlfriend. And when we had this conversation, he was 32 years old. And I was thinking to myself, wow, I wonder what she would think if she knew that you were making a film about her all these years later and you're no longer together. And I knew nothing about, I knew very little about him, nothing about her, nothing about their relationship. So the story itself in typecast is completely invented, but it was the question of how would a woman feel if she knew that she were the subject of someone else's movie years later. And from there, I invented my characters and my setting.
Very clever. Once you wrote this book, how did you proceed? Did you search for an agent, decide to choose a hybrid, a small press, or did you self-publish?
So ultimately, I'm published by a hybrid. I did originally seek the traditional route. I did have an agent, and I have, thanks to her, collected many lovely rejection emails. And ultimately, as a book publicist, I knew that having traditional distribution channels definitely is a value. So I was hesitant to do anything other than traditional publishing. But as you mentioned in my intro, I spend a lot of time taking pretty pictures of books. You can see those on my Instagram. And through that Instagram channel, I had met a bunch of novelists, including several who were published by Hybrids. And one of them had her second book coming out with a publisher I was unfamiliar with, Girl Friday Books. And I reached out to her to inquire, you know, who's this publisher? Why did you change? And I have, this is an aside, but I have found the author community to be so amazingly supportive. I never met this woman before. I mean, we'd exchanged some Instagram messages, and she scheduled a call with me. She's based in California. Her name, I'll promote her, Angela Terry. She's fantastic. She and I had a wonderful conversation, and she offered to introduce me to Girl Friday Books, her publisher, and she did. And the rest, as they say, is history. So Girl Friday is a hybrid, and they've really done a fantastic job on the traditional side of what they do, the sales reps and sales conference and getting them into getting the book into bookstores. So, and they were also great on the copy editing and proofreading, and I love my cover. So it's been good.
Well, we're so fortunate these days to have so many options. Authors can go in so many different directions.
Yep, absolutely.
Did real people inspire any of your characters?
The short answer is no. One of the things I do when I'm writing dialogue is I kind of speak it aloud or even just in my own head. And I will say that probably when I was wondering how someone might respond to something, I occasionally thought about some people I know, but certainly if I did that, the characters themselves are composites. Nobody is anyone in my life. Although, actually, I should say a couple of the things that the kids in the book say might have been lifted directly from my children.
Yes, definitely, especially when they're teenagers. Well, we know that you're a publicist, so we're very interested in finding out what publicity you are doing for your own work and how does that vary from what you do for your clients?
So most of my clients are business book authors. They are management consultants, investment advisors, career coaches. So in that sense, there's not overlap in terms of the media who cover fiction. But I certainly felt like I did come into this with an advantage of knowing how to research media, how to reach out to the media. And I've definitely spent many, many hours as my own publicist reaching out to book bloggers. I've been reading endlessly all the different book lists that come out. Typecast was on a Scary Mommy list and a Chatelaine list, which is a women's magazine in Canada. So I've been spending a lot of time contacting anyone I can find. And Bookstagram has been amazing. A lot of Bookstagrammers I've become friendly with through my own Bookstagram. And I mean, another talk about a supportive community. So that's been fantastic.
What about ads? Do you try any of the Facebook or the Amazon ads? Have you found anything that you think is moving the needle?
I have done some boosted posts on Facebook and Instagram, and I think I'm seeing a bump with those. I have not tried Amazon ads. I've also done a couple of sponsored posts in e-newsletters that go out to readers. It's very hard to tell when you see the bump because it's so difficult to get sales data. It's a challenge, I'm sure, for every author you've spoken with. So, But I, you know, like lots of authors, I look on Amazon and, oh, what's my rank now? Has it moved? And that's the best I can tell.
Well, tell us a little bit more about the book and then read from it so that we can hear your tone and voice in the book.
Sure. So Typecast is the story of Callie Dressler. She's a 31-year-old preschool teacher living in the house she grew up in. Her parents have retired to Florida, and the house is in a community much like the one I'm sitting in now, suburban New Jersey. And she's already facing a big life change because her older type A sister, brother-in-law, and niece are about to move in with her while their house is undergoing a renovation. And just as she's facing this, she gets wind that there's a movie coming out, and it's written by her college ex-boyfriend, and it sounds like it's based on their breakup. So throughout the book, we start to get some hints about why Callie broke up with Ethan. And there is a dual timeline before and after through which that starts to roll out. And there's a new potential romantic interest, her sister's architect. And I like to say there's some sister drama, there's some romance, there's some forgiveness, there's some regrets. And I'm thrilled to read to you a little from the book. I'm going to put on my reading glasses because I'm over 50. And I'm going to read a short passage from the second chapter, which is actually the first chapter in the after timeline, the present day timeline. And this is right after she hears about this movie from a college friend who read about it in the alumni magazine. So Callie is taking a look at the alumni magazine, and I'm going to start reading. She studied the photograph of Ethan. Same sandy brown hair, a bit windblown, same blue eyes, but no glasses. Did he finally get contacts? His face had filled out a bit. It wasn't as angular as she remembered. It was weird seeing his face again. It was so familiar. She could almost feel the texture of his skin under her fingers. And yet, almost alien, a face she hadn't looked at, except in her mind's eye, for years. It was strange that someone who had been such a huge part of her life had been so entirely excised that she hadn't seen his face or even heard his voice for 10 years. She wasn't on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, and the last time she had spoken to him was when she'd ended the relationship by phone, halfway into the summer after they graduated, also known as the summer she planned to spend with her parents before moving 3,000 miles away to be with him. Of course, Ethan had tried to call her after that, but she knew talking wouldn't help either of them. Nothing could have changed her mind, and anything else she could have said would only hurt him more. Looking at his photo now, she lingered on his half-smile. Someone who didn't know him might think it was the real thing, but she knew it was only the beginning of the huge grin that spread across his entire face when he was truly happy. Cute as he was, it was hard to imagine he was single, but she didn't think he was married. There had been no report of it in the quarterly, and she assumed that news would have reached her somehow, although, as far as she knew, none of her girlfriends had ever communicated with Ethan beyond the phone call Jenna had received immediately afterward. But Jenna couldn't answer his big question. Why? Because she didn't know. During the many times she and her friend had spoken in the aftermath, Jenna checking in with her to make sure she was okay, Callie couldn't bring herself to tell her the truth. It was just too painful. And she didn't want to know what Jenna would say if she knew. She didn't think she could stand losing anyone else.
That's great.
Thank you.
You've thrown us all back to thinking about previous relationships.
Yes. that was one of the things that I felt like was sort of a universal, that we all have relationships in our past. We all have decisions that we made that we question after the fact, whether they're romantic decisions or other decisions. And a lot of, at least in my experience, a lot of growing up is about understanding that the choices you made were the best ones that you could make at the time. And at a certain point, you have to let them go.
And if they come back into your present as well.
Yes, yes, that's a challenge.
What about reading for pleasure? Do you have to read so many nonfiction books that you don't read fiction? Or if you do, what genres?
I read a lot of fiction. And most of what I read is, well, I don't know about most, but a lot of what I read is women's fiction, similar to the genre typecast is in. That would be my favorite, women's fiction about women's growth and with a little bit of romance. But I also read, I like suspense. I like, not if it's scary, but I like suspense and thrillers. I'll read a little bit of historical fiction, a little bit of just contemporary that's not women's fiction. A little bit of YA. I've dabbled in some fantasy, but mostly contemporary, either women's fiction or just contemporary.
Well, you read exactly what I read, and I've gotten into these psychological thrillers lately, and they will suck you in and keep you pedaling that bike for a long distance.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I have one of the next books I'm going to read. I'm a mood reader, so I don't plan, but I have a feeling that one of my next books is going to be another Lisa Jewell. So I've read three of hers already. So it's nice to have someone with such a big backlist when you like their writing.
You can start binging her like we do on the streaming services now, trying to catch up on all the episodes.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
How long do you think it took you to write your book?
The first draft took me about 6 months, but then it went through, I would say, three revisions. The first one where I just was rereading it on my own. And then the others, I worked with an editor, and I also, I was doing a writing workshop. And so I was bringing it in and getting feedback from fellow writers. So it's hard to say, I would probably say all told, I spent 6 months writing the first draft and then 6 months to a year on revisions. And then the rest was trying to get it published, or once I had the contract, dealing with the year or so from contract to publication, where I was dealing with the cover and dealing with proofreads and that kind of thing.
That's really fast writing.
When I'm writing, and I need to get back to it, when I'm writing, I get into it every day. I write every day. Because if I don't write every day, then I don't write. So.
Do you have another book in you?
I certainly hope so. I've started two others. One is a sequel to Typecast that takes place 4 years later and focuses on my main character, Callie's sister, Nina, the one who moved in with her while her house was under construction. The other one is completely separate, and that's the one I'm really eager to get back to. It's about a woman who is in her 20s, and she lost her mom to cancer when she was 15. And when the book opens, her father has just unexpectedly died. And her mom's sister presents her with a letter that her mother wrote to her before she died. And she wanted it given to her after her father had died. So probably anticipating it was going to be much later in life. And the letter has a big secret in it. So
I love those. I love family secrets.
We all have them. Some less dramatic or more dramatic than others, but
that's very true. And I think that your audience will want you to continue the characters into another book. I found that with the two books that I've written, I thought they were just going to be standalones, but the readers are saying, what about another book? So I'm wondering if they're going to become series after all of this.
Right, right. Well, it's quite a compliment when your readers love your characters that much that they want more of them.
Do you ever Google yourself or read the reviews, and how do you deal with the bad or the good ones?
It's new enough that I'm still fairly obsessed with Googling myself. I do read all the reviews, the vast majority of which I'm thrilled to say have been positive, and I certainly love those. And that's another part of what I do for publicity. I do a lot of repurposing quotes and making them look pretty and posting them. The negative ones, for the most part, I've been able to let them roll off my back for the most part. Because I think a lot of what I've heard as criticism has, I feel like been more about them as readers and what they're looking for. I think if people are expecting it to be a straight romance novel and they're disappointed, it's not a romance novel, although there's romance in it. And and sometimes just not every book is for every person. I know there are plenty of books that everyone raves about, and I read them and I think, okay, that was all right. So we all like what we like. And that's fair.
I think so too. And I can see when people are trying to be kind, but give us a little instructive criticism. You know, I don't mind that at all. I love to hear from book clubs, you know, when we zoom into book clubs around the country or we're sitting in someone's living room. I would really rather hear what they didn't like about the book than what they did. That just helps me so much more as a writer.
Yeah.
But when somebody gives you a one star because they didn't like the way the book felt in their hand or something like that, you know, that just infuriates me.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I mean, and it's funny because those are the ones that stick in your head. I got a 2-star and it just said too long. I'm like, okay.
Unfortunately, we have to live with all of that.
Yes. Yes. But I've been visiting book clubs too. I mean, that's so nice, especially to hear how people have related to the story. I've visited 4 book clubs so far, and in 2 of them, I've had women tell me they felt like I was in their head knowing their life. Not that they had the movie aspect, but, you know, the 4-year-long college boyfriend and the regrets and the, yeah, so.
Yes, I think that is just really wonderful when they're not our friends or our family and they've just found the book. It's just, you know, such high praise.
Yes, absolutely.
What do you think was the best money you've ever spent as a writer?
Oh, wow. The best money I ever spent as a writer. I would say investing in a developmental editor. When I was still in the process of trying to get the book published traditionally, I had gotten the first handful of rejections, and my hope was that based on what they said, I would know how to make the book better. And I wasn't really sure what, there was not a consistent theme in what I was being told. And I hired an independent editor who used to be an acquiring editor at Simon & Schuster. And it was phenomenally helpful. She did a detailed line edit of the whole manuscript and wrote me something like a 35-page editorial letter with, you know, addressing everything from setting to character development to plot points and suggesting different directions I might go in. And it was amazing. So she's the first or second person I thank in my acknowledgments. She was amazing.
That's very worthwhile.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Andrea, As always, our very last interview question is, our writers over 50 are quite a unique group. Do you have any advice for writers 50 and above?
So my advice is the same as writers, I guess, of all ages, which is writers write. It sounds kind of cliche, and that it's never too late. I was talking in the most recent book club I went to, they were asking me about my publishing journey. And one of them said they were really impressed by the fact that I didn't give up, that it would have been so easy to have given up. And I never really thought about it that way, because you don't assess your own story. Your own story is just the story you lived. And I think it's a good lesson, especially as you get older and maybe you feel like, oh, I've put so many years into this and it hasn't worked, that doesn't mean it's time to give up. It just means it's time to work harder, maybe change direction a little, but you can do it.
Well, I believe that too. And that's why we're interviewing authors who have written their first book after the age of 50, because we have so much hindsight, we have so much wisdom, and hopefully we've learned a lot from our years behind so that we can have a great future. I'm interviewing people in their 70s, 80s, and 90s who are still writing beautiful work. So we look forward to seeing more of your work out there in the world, and wish you the best with this relatively new launch of your first book. And we're so happy that we can now say you're one of our authors over 50.
Thank you so much, Julia. This was so much fun. And I have to say that almost all of the authors that I have met in my journey have been over 50 and debut novelists. So I know I'm part of this phenomenal, phenomenal group.
Well, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Thank you for joining us today. Please look for Authors Over 50 every Thursday, when we will have conversations with accomplished debut novelists over the age of 50. Please subscribe and share with a friend. And check out my own publication journey after 50 at www.juliadaily, that's D-A-I-L-Y, like daily newspaper.com. Until next time, keep reading and writing. And remember, it's never too late to fulfill a dream in life's sweetest third.